I prefer the term bullied.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I feel much, like that's
much more politically more correct.
Well, howdy, folks. It's Friday, and we are drunk and retired.
Not that I've been listening to some podcasts about podcasting or anything.
No.
Yo, dog. I heard you like podcasting.
Exactly.
Cool. So I can finally hear you in one of those off mic moments, or you think you've got the hot mic and we can catch you.
Yeah, you can catch me going to the bathroom.
Yeah. I was going to say cooking, but that's a close second.
Well, you know, I could definitely cook. I'll need to set up a Zoom station in the kitchen.
But the possibilities of your cooking show happening, that's exciting to me. I don't know if the rest of you listeners have been following Paul on the social medias, but he's a hell of a chef, or I'm using that word. He cooks very beautiful food.
Yeah, he's a pretty good cook.
Yeah.
One of the things I've started doing is I have started a YouTube channel just to kind of scratch your creative itch. And a bunch of other people I know in sort of the barbecue community have also started YouTube channels. Mm. And the thing I have discovered is I would be much better at this kind of stuff if I had a personality that shone through when I talked.
Yeah.
Because like I watch this guy he's Chud's Barbecue, he's at Leroy and Lewis, and like when he's talking and explaining, he's just like all personality and interesting, and I'm just me.
Yeah,
and I wish I had
presence.
I think it's that thing where you kind of grew up a little bit antisocial and a little bit shy, and you just never really learned to project your personality into things.
Yeah, I'm very resistant to calling like a person's traits inherent. So I'm glad that you said that like it's a learned thing, because just kind of naturally shied away. You know, I was very scared to talk to humans. But I think I get so much energy from it in that sort of traditional categorization of extrovert that I just kept trying a lot. But the first, you know, the people I podcast with the most on an old show, like John is more, old podcasting friend is more of an introvert. And before every episode, he'd do like a little hand dance or he'd jump up and down because he had to remind himself, like, I got to get all my juices going for this. Mm-hmm. And it's like really like putting on a performance, and like, yeah. I even elevate myself. Like I try to express myself like I'm huge on a stage while we're recording, not because anyone's going to see it, but because you can feel it when you hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's hope for you yet. What are you
cooking?
There is
hope for me yet. Oh, I'm bouncing all over the place. Really, I'm just trying to get better at doing like video production. And so I need a reason to be doing video production stuff. And very since nice. I also cook, I thought that that would be the thing to do. So I've done some barbecue. I've done some Chinese food. I've done just stuff that I think will be fairly easy to like cook and talk about at the same time. And I've kind of experimented with talking while doing it versus recording it and then talking over it in post. And both have their challenges.
Yeah. What are you using to produce? Like, so recording with OBS, I imagine?
Well, I mean, I'm just recording with my camera. I've got a Canon EOS M50, which is kind of the go-to, like, pocket mirrorless camera for people doing this kind of stuff.
Is it the little little small one? It's like yay big? Or is it?
It's like it's a smaller version of an SLR.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was trying to imagine.
So it's still got removable cap. It's still got interchangeable lenses and all that sort of stuff. But it's not quite as big as a full DSLR. Okay. Yeah. So I've got that. And then I've been using DaVinci Resolve to do my editing. So I was using KDN Live. because Linux. But I came across DaVinci Resolve, and it is, it's not open source, but it is free. They have a free version, which does absolutely everything I need. And it is available on all the OSs, including Linux.
That is a privilege to have decent software on Linux, right? As somebody who's been hardcore converting. Every time somebody complains about, like, that's just an Electron app, like they used Electron and wrapped a web app, I'm like, that is a goddamn blessing. Absolutely. Do not dismiss that. That is a freaking blessing to run a native application. You don't know what I go through.
Right. And the other thing, the killer app of it, and others do it as well, but the Ripple edit, the Ripple delete, I mean. So when you pick a section to edit out, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your... you've got your long bar of video and you choose a selection, you hit delete and it deletes that section, but then aligns everything else back up to it.
Oh yeah.
Oh, like, that's slick.
The, what is it? GarageBand won't do that at all. Like you have to like constantly move everything over.
Yeah.
God, I hate that so much.
There's a, there's a shortcut for it for sure.
Really?
I used, yeah, there's like a keyboard shortcut to like just to smush them together. I'm pretty sure.
The joining.
Oh man, I used to be pretty slick on GarageBand, but I've gone full Linux, so I don't remember. I don't even know what an Apple looks like anymore. But speaking of which, is anyone on this line care about the announcements today? It was WWDC. Not to timestamp this too hard, but within recent listener past, that WWDC just happened.
Yeah, it was yesterday, wasn't it? Or is it the day before?
Close enough. Yeah. It happened, and there's some new updates to all the OSs. It seems like a big, hey, our software kind of sucks, so we're going to make it better release, which I appreciate. It's hard to avoid trying to make a new, you know, what's next after the face scanning, like some sort of, you know, bare-chested verification or... so it's nice that they just tried to improve some stuff that sucks as opposed to add, you know, dumb replacements.
Well, did you see the memes that came out immediately about the live things, like you can drop your widgets on the screen, and Android developers were like, huh, that looks familiar.
Sure.
I did see someone linked a photo of like the Windows phone and said, oh, look, it's the new iOS. I didn't follow the announcements to actually get the joke, but I still laugh because it's funny.
That's
the other
cool.
thing I saw someone talk about was someone was joking or serious about all the new Macs being iPads.
Yeah, well, the idea is that they're all going to the ARM processor, so there's no reason why you couldn't take an iOS app that would run on the same processor for iPhone, iPad, or the MacBook when it gets finally released. Like it's a natural progression. They've created this walled garden of all these new apps now on the iOS world. And there's, I mean, hell, you can get Office, right, on iOS. So why have Mac or OS X anymore? Why spend the time and effort when you can just have a unified operating system that in theory you could like have like a MacBook Air that you slide your iPhone into, right, and then it becomes like a larger laptop. It's like a natural progression to that kind of world, which
yeah that's true, I guess. And I think I saw someone also talk about the move to ARM will mean that they'll have to do most of their development inside of VMs. And then it went a little bit further to joking about this is the year of Linux on the desktop, because whether you're running Windows or the new Mac, you'll end up with Linux VMs doing most of the work.
Well, you've been running in, you know, a Linux environment for sure on Mac OS for forever. Like, I mean, isn't the kernel...
It's Unix.
It's actually BSD-based core.
Fifth freedom.
keep your freedoms to yourself, buddy. I'm just happy I learned some Linuxy things before switching over from Mac OS. It's really interesting to hear about the ARM processor. So I think that joke is two parts. Like part one is, yes, they're unifying into one CPU architecture, which is definitely part of this navigation towards like streamlining away from all these different operating systems into one unified operating system. You can see the line of sight to that. What I also saw was like there's some jokes because the iPad started as the overly simple device, and now it's with the 14 release coming out, it's getting more macOS features. So they're like slowly bending towards each other, and macOS is getting a little bit more simplified. I'm just dying to be able to like get a terminal on my iPad because that is, I know it's there. Like I know what you're running underneath is available right to me. And there's some decent apps that give you some environments, but the Apple Store doesn't allow you to run any sort of arbitrary execution of code. Like it won't let you download stuff. Like I can't pip install software onto my right iPad environment. And I'd really like to. So my hope is that they continue to bend that direction, and maybe because they're not innovating in hardware, they'll slowly get there with software.
Arguably, I think they still are innovating in hardware. It's just no longer consumer grade, right? Like, isn't the whole argument that Facebook and major cloud providers are starting to look at ARM as an actual operating system to run servers because of the less power required, the less heat required? And if you look at it from the consumer level of Apple looking at ARM, all of a sudden our iPhones can last 12, 14 hours without a charge. Imagine doing that with your laptop. Like the idea that your MacBook Air could truly survive on one charge from the morning to you going to bed at night, imagine the productivity could happen out of that.
If that's what you want, why are you not already using an iPad?
For me, it's the keyboard.
Like what's? But you can put a keyboard on an iPad.
But then I might as well get a laptop then, right?
That's like, his question.
But that's my point, right? So, like, yeah. Do you want a cheap lightweight laptop that lasts 14 hours? Mm-hmm. If so, you already have one. It's called an iPad that you stick a USB keyboard dock onto.
Counterpoint, they have different vibes to them. Like in the limitation that you run into on a laptop is the portability and like the ease of being overwhelmed because you can multitask and you do have terminal access and you should probably do your expenses and check out your budget when you're in the middle of coding something. Like, but what's great on an iPad is like it forces focus by design, but that focus comes with limitation. So like I would love it. It's really does come down to the software interface to it at this point and like maybe keyboard preferences, but I really do think it's software. So like if I did have the option to toggle between like a focus mode that's very iPad versus a freedom mode, maybe the fifth freedom mode, so I could go full nerd on it, like that would be fantastic. But like they're getting there, but they sure as shit aren't there yet.
Is that fifth freedom the go freedom yourself freedom?
The freedom to die in my walled garden without you judging me.
Right. So something you mentioned before, food. Yeah, we were talking about food and cooking and YouTube. And you've been digging into some grilling, Matt.
I have.
So I'm curious to see where you're at with that. What have you done recently? How's it been? Successes, lessons?
Dear listeners, Paul, I'd say somewhat browbeat me into a purchase of a particular.
I prefer the term bullied.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I feel like that's
much more politically correct. So I went with a PK360, which is this niche Arkansas based beast of an object. And it's great as a charcoal grill and secondarily as a smoker. They say it really does fall into the grill smoker line, which you can debate or tell us more about, Paul. But in a nutshell, I've been using it for indirect cooking. So like charcoal on the right, food on the left. And then if I need to sear something, just pop it over the charcoal real quick. Mm-hmm. And it has been really, really fun. Did a bunch of chicken a few different ways, and two or three huge salmon fillets now. And then I recently smoked over 6+ hours, a few racks of pork ribs.
Nice.
Yeah.
They looked really good, especially the second batch.
The second one blew my mind. It was so good. Yeah. So the change up of like actually using wood, like, so throwing, cherry wood chunks into it, mm-hmm. Was, I just underestimated how much that would do. I thought it would just, you know, add a little flavor, but it just changed the entire color, texture, the whole jam.
Did you, what's the word, soak your wood chips at all, or did you just throw them in there?
No, I you know, listened to this browbeating son of a whatever he is, and just went with big old chunks of cherry wood. They're probably like 2 to 3 inches by 2 inches by 2 inches, so like pretty wholesome, mm-hmm. and mix that in with some briquette charcoals.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks that are the thought leaders in the grilling community are all about the not soaking wood mm-hmm. chips, because what you end up doing is causing smolder instead of flame. Mm. And when you get smolder, you get dirty smoke.
Yeah.
And so you're really pushing the volatiles into the smoke, and then that's what's being caught on the outside of your meat.
On the pellicle. On the pellicle?
Yeah.
So yeah,
when you I just made bacon, which we'll have to talk about making your own bacon, because it is unbelievable.
It really is.
Do it a while back. But when you make bacon, right, you cure it. So like salts mm-hmm. and your nitrites and stuff, keep it safe in the fridge for like a week. And then you kind of wash it off, and it's cured at that point. But you put it back in the fridge completely uncovered for like a day. And what happens is it kind of forms what you call a pellicle or pellicle, something like that. And it's like a, not quite a skin, but it's just, means that this, like, it's something for the smoke to attach to as the smoke's running over it. And so that's one of the ways you get like really good smoky bacon, is to have that step of like leaving it in the fridge uncovered to kind of form that.
That's really neat.
I've had some friends, well, at Costco, you can get the big old slabs of the pork belly for 30-ish bucks at the time.
Yeah.
And
Oshbucks. I'm like, what's an Oshbuck? Like, are we on other currencies?
There you
go. Are you using Bitcoin alternatives now?
Ethereum. But it turns out we ended up having so much of this, because we cut it in half and we made two different batches out of the two different styles. And we ended up with so much that I ended up giving it away as presents to some people. And I've actually had people come back to me and be like, JJ, hey, do you have any more of that bacon? Hey, JJ, do you got any more of that bacon? And unfortunately, I was going to do another batch almost immediately afterwards, after I got that feedback. And I kept putting it off, that my pork belly went bad in my, rotted, or not rotted, but I guess went bad inside my fridge. And my wife looked at me and she's like, well, you didn't use it in time. It went bad. Your punishment is you have to wait a little while before you can do this again, because we just don't want to have like random meat like going bad.
That's really punishing everybody.
It is. It really is.
So how long is too long to leave it in the fridge?
It's dependent, right? If it's in, like if it's already vacuum sealed, like from the supermarket, like pork, you've probably got a solid week. I mean, obviously you've got the use by date, although these days they use a sell by date, which makes it more confusing.
It really is confusing.
So rude.
I like most meats, like I would say no, like a week is a stretch. Beef though can be different. Like if you buy a whole brisket, if you keep it longer than a week, you're effectively wet aging it further.
Mm. Because, I didn't know that was a term.
Because it's kind of the whole muscle and it's got plenty of structure. At a certain point, there's a Daniel Vaughan has a article he wrote on a year old brisket he cooked. And he said it was too long.
I will say, Broberg's reaction was, mine was,
I heard a year old piece of meat and you heard, brisket.
I mean, there are like, when you're talking dry aging, there are some places that'll have year, 2 year dry aged steaks. You pay a fortune for it, but that's a thing.
We've been there, haven't
the
we?
The wet aging doesn't necessarily translate to that longer aging process. But certainly, like Aaron Franklin will talk about keeping them around for an extra couple of weeks to kind of do a little bit of extra wet aging.
It's going to be a couple of weeks. It was just announced they're closing.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it hit the news feed. Franklin's Barbecue is closing down. Well, they say temporarily. I'm putting that in quotes. But
all right.
That's a huge blow to the...
That's true. But Loro, which is his other thing, I think is remaining open. So that's a thing.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Franklin's in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
The most famous kind of barbecue place for people that kind of know what barbecue is. Like that is closing for now. That's wild.
Yeah.
I would
imagine they'll come back. I think they're too big a name to not be able to come back.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I do want to ask, though. This is a hotly debated subject in my mind.
All right.
I went to the grocery store, and I decided to buy a steak to put, like, a steak in the butcher shop or whatever, the market that's outside and that looks nice and pretty. I want to eat that steak. How long do I have from taking out of that butcher case in the piece of paper, mind you, to my house, how long do I have to eat it before it would go bad? Because after a day, it obviously changes. Yeah, pretty much. It changes color, right? Like it goes, and if I just have it in that one piece of paper,
That's fine. So the change of color isn't going bad. That is just chemical reactions that happen on the surface due to the presence or lack of oxygen.
So
often when you get a piece of steak, any piece of beef from the supermarket, often parts of it that are touching packaging material goes like a dull gray color.
Yes.
And if you actually remove the packaging and leave it for a while, it will actually go red again.
Oh.
And that's purely, I don't know, enzymes or whatever garbage. I don't know how chemistry works, reacting to the presence or lack of presence of oxygen.
Okay.
So like it going a little bit gray, totally okay. So my rule of thumb is for like steaks and stuff, I'll go like 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
My favorite thing to do is to salt it and leave it uncovered in the fridge overnight and then have it the next day. Because what happens is you get the salt draws moisture out, but then there's like an equilibrium change and then the water gets dragged back into the meat and brings the salt with it. And so that's how you get seasoning all through this. It's like some sort of osmosis type process.
Am I seeing Broberg take his headphones off and walk off of the podcast to go to the grocery store real quick? Did I just see that happen?
I am super into everything you're saying, but,
So that does a couple of things. A, it gets your meat seasoned all the way through, but then it also dries out the surface of the meat. And so you get a much better char because the char, the browning is the Maillard reaction. Mm-hmm. And that can only happen when it hits a certain temperature, which can only happen when there's no more moisture to create a steam barrier. So by having a drier surface, you get better browning on your meat. And so, that's where the flavor is.
Now, obviously, I'm going to take this to the extreme here.
Of course.
How many days is too long in this case?
Well, if you leave it more than a day, you start to getting to like it curing, right? Because realistically, the difference between a piece of pork belly and a piece of bacon is salt and thyme.
Mm.
And it's the same with any other piece of meat. So after like after a day or so, it'll start to affect the texture and be a little bit, have that more cured kind of texture and feel to it. But I find like overnight or like if you salt it and open it up first thing in the morning and have it that night, that's like plenty of time.
Okay.
So anywhere from like 8 to 20 hours kind of thing.
Let's take it one step farther. With sous vide, and I want to make a sous vide steak, do I salt it? Like, if I have a steak, I want some seasoning on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use my sous vide method.
Mm-hmm.
Do I salt it overnight, then sous vide it, then sear it? Do I?
So I would. Sous vide is effectively doing a reverse sear, right?
Yes.
Where you bring it up slowly to about the temperature you want, and then you finish it on something really, really hot.
Yes.
And so unless you're doing the crazy like 24-hour, 48-hour super low temperature, which you only do with large, tough cuts of meat anyway, you would want to, to me, you want to season it, let it sit for a while, and then bag it and cook it. But moisture is going to come out in the bag anyway, so feel free to like salt it and then vacuum seal it or put it in your bag, pull the air out.
The reason why I asked.
And then freeze it. So to me, sous vide is about convenience.
Okay.
Right? And so the most convenient thing about sous vide is you can pull something vacuum packed out of your freezer and stick it in the sous vide. And then like 2 hours later, you have a steak that you just finish off on.
Oh.
See ya.
Oh, that's clever.
What the actual shit? Like this is not what I thought sous vide was about, being bad at cooking, but having enough money to buy devices.
Oh, good God, no. Oh my, oh my.
The intersection of those two things.
Robert,
that is absolutely the case. Yes, I agree. There is very few things that you cook sous vide that are better because you did them sous vide versus other methods. Like if you can do a good reverse sear on a steak in your like oven and pan or in your PK grill, that will be as good, if not better, than sous vide and then cooked.
Mm.
But there's a lot more convenience and a lot less skill required to do sous vide. So to me, sous vide is all about the convenience, right? I can go to Costco, I can buy like a whole ribeye, I can cut it into steaks, I can season it, I can vacuum bag it, I can stick it in the freezer. And then with 2 hours notice, I can make a perfect steak from the freezer every time.
That's really neat. I mean, so despite the shade I threw at you, JJ, I have a sous vide that I received as a gift because I was excited because I was like it was like a temporary meme in the tech space, like get your Bluetooth enabled sous vide and be able to, you know, use if then then that to start dinner or some shit, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I it's okay. Like they say with beer, right? Your favorite beer is the beer you're sitting in front and drinking right now, right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't, as long as we're all eating good food and having a good time, man, everyone has opinions. For me though, I truly do actually like using the sous vide because to CZ's point, it cooks it in a really well done way and I don't have to think about it. I can just like throw it in there, put it at the temperature I want, and then I just throw it on the grill to get the grill marks that I need. Yes, okay, it doesn't look as pretty as I want it to because it's got that weird like brown looking shit. But it does come out well. But I've had this really hard problem with pre-seasoning a steak in putting in the sous vide because all the moisture comes out, right, of the sous when it's inside the bag.
That happens regardless. So whether you season it before or not, moisture will come out. Because Like when basically you cook, liquid, moisture right? When you cook, moisture comes out.
Yeah.
It's just, it's trapped in the bag.
So
best thing to do is to take it out of the bag and then just like wrap it in a paper towel and kind of let it pat itself dry. Mm-hmm. And then when you blast it over high heat, that heat will be enough to get rid of the rest of the surface moisture.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. What were you going to say about your buddy, Josh Weissman?
Man, I don't know why, but it's him and you are constantly like fighting on prop ideas and how to cook in my mind. But anyway.
Right. So what does he say?
Well, so I haven't actually seen the video yet because I think he's putting it together, but he teased it recently, which was that he had this really, really nice ribeye with basically a slab of butter on the top of it and mm-hmm. like a whole, like two things of rosemary on both sides, saying mm-hmm. this boy is about to take a bath. And I'm like, I've done that before, but wait a second. That's a lot of freaking butter. So
yeah, I do. No, I do that all the time.
Okay, so butter, like I've never used butter inside on a sous vide and a steak.
So any kind of fat, but the reason butter works well is because it's a solid fat, right? So you don't have to worry about it being drawn out into your thing.
Yeah.
But like basically you're then moving into confit territory, right?
Say again?
Confit?
No, I don't understand.
Confit is when you cook something in its own in fat, right? So the canonical example is like confit duck legs. Uh-huh. Right. So traditionally duck legs are cured first and then they're cooked in their fat, and then you can store them in fat for months at a time in like a cool basement in like the south of France.
Oh.
Okay. Certainly you couldn't do it in Texas in your shed.
Okay. Good right? to know.
And the combination of like a few days of like a salt cure and then being kept in a anaerobic environment, like underneath fat in a jug or whatever, is enough to keep it until you can cook it. So it's mm-hmm. totally a preservation technique, but the slow cooking in fat is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned Chud's Barbecue just before. Yep. So he just did a video on doing beef chuck roast burnt ends.
Mm.
And so burnt ends, usually you take from a cooked brisket, you cube it, and then you cook it further. He cubes the chuck, and I do similar for pork belly. He cubes the chuck and seasons it up and smokes it as the cubes. But then when it's nearly ready, he pours a bunch of beef fat, like rendered beef fat on it, and then cooks it for another couple of hours, really slow heat in the beef fat. And that really just like makes it super tender and really delicious and fall apart. And then you have this amazing seasoned smoked beef fat that you can then cook other things in, like potatoes and stuff.
That's
like a 1-2 punch.
Exceptional.
So can I just say for a moment, somebody was complaining just a few moments ago about not being able to describe and or have a personality describing something as they were doing it. My stomach is actually growling just from the description I just heard. I don't know about you, Broberg, but I think somebody was being a little bit facetious a moment ago.
I think if you've ever seen Paul talk on his own, he is pretty damn boring. So like, I think what this confirms is that he needs some hype people that get excited. He needs an audience.
Yeah.
You need a conversation.
Yeah. So
I'll be the gator from little Dick. No, come on, really?
You can be Dave? My rubber duck.
Have you not seen Dave, the TV show?
Literally no idea what you're talking about.
Do I look like a 12-year-old boy?
Do either of you look like a 12-year-old boy? Don't say I do, because it's kind of true.
Yeah. All right, Harry Potter.
It's not cool anymore.
Yeah, I know. Rip. It's like it's such an easy punch. That's like bad. I need to find a better joke about your looks. I need to find a new way to neg you about how you look.
That word doesn't mean what you think it means.
Wait, neg is when you give someone like a negative compliment to like.
No,
it's to solicit some physical contact.
Oh, well. Yeah,
well, I mean,
yeah. we'll have to see.
You could be meaning it exactly happens. What you mean, but you might want to double check that one.
I just thought it was like a negative insult. compliment that guys would use to try and get that kind of attention, as well as just in general.
Yeah, it's usually meant to bring down the self-esteem of a person they're interested in order to make them feel like the other person's a catch. It's a very, very, it's definitely a pejorative of a word. And yeah, generally relates to, put that in the category of toxic masculinity.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't use it even in a joking sense.
It's the late 90s, early 2000s. What was it? The TV shows were used to be on MTV. Like that stuff that we don't talk about anymore because it was bad for society. And
Road Rules?
Yes.
Oh man, the 90s did not age well.
It really didn't.
This isn't some attempt at erasure here. It is just, go watch any action movie from the 90s and you're like, you said that about that person? What?
Oh boy.
Yeah. Not good.
Man, come a long way and not far enough.
Yep.
Speaking of coming a long way, it's a weird transition, but I gotta ask you, is anyone just sick of their shitty email and kind of excited about Hey?
No. I signed up for it and I saw something that kind of looked like email, but kind of didn't. And I feel like, I don't know.
Fair enough. JJ?
Go on, JJ. Tell me what you think.
Okay. So I actually got an invite, which first of all, I didn't think it was ever going to happen.
Fancy.
Yeah. So I guess I'm cool. But I walked into it, I set it up, and I'm like, first of all, they didn't give me JJ. And hey, I swear.
They wanted like $1,000 a year for a 2-letter email address.
Asshole tax. I'm into it.
Right?
Yeah. So I got my normal JJ Asgard that I have everywhere else. And I got in, and then all of a sudden I looked at it and I'm like, all this, like Brandon Richard says, and also Matt Ray, I have all these filters already on Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
I've perfected this whole filtering process inside of Gmail. Everybody knows my Gmail address. I'm going to have the exact same email address just with Hey instead of Gmail. This does not seem like it's really for me, but I have my name. So I've squatted it in case for whatever reason I have to go to it, but I'm Gmail's good enough for me. Also, I'm not going to pay $100 for not seeing ads. I go out of my way to have like all ad blockers and shit like that. So already the $100 of like not having ads and doing all that stuff, I'm not seeing a plus.
Yeah, I feel like we're seeing very different points here, and I can respectfully disagree on it, because the main thing for me is the Stockholm syndrome of thinking that like my 1,000 filters and the way I manage my filters on Gmail is good enough. Like I am sick of that shit. I think it is just a sign. Yet another sign that Google doesn't care about its consumers, because we're not their consumer, we're the product. Mm-hmm. Their consumers are the people buying us. They're buying our data all the time. Mm-hmm. And before I go full like free is and freedom on on you all, maybe a little of that has sunk in as I focus on opensource.com and read more about the history of open source. But I am okay with that, because I really am at a point where I'm sick of being the product instead of the consumer. And I'm now holding that as a bar for everything I'm using. And if I ever feel like I am stuck in a sense of like the Stockholm syndrome of like, oh no, I love this product because it does everything I'm used to, I'm done with that mentality when it comes to email, at least. So I'm going all in on Hey to give it a try. I'm enjoying the weird way it uses like spatial awareness as a way of organizing information. It does suck that it doesn't have filters by keyword yet. It has it only by author, so like the address that's emailing you. But I imagine they'll get to that feature eventually.
Did you go all in and like import your mail from somewhere else? Are you forwarding from Gmail? Like, because that's my biggest thing.
A great question.
I don't want to, like, I feel like I don't want to invest the time to figure out if I like it or not, because then it's going to be really hard to go back.
Some costs. Yeah.
So that's the really easy thing I think I've done, which in this like testing state I'm in, I'm like almost 2 weeks in. So I've got to put like pay or stop using it soon. But I just set up forwarders from my two Gmail accounts, and and send that to the address. So it's actually a zero sunk cost on the change because, you know, worst case scenario, I just delete the Hey account, delete the forwards, and my previous emails are still in both inboxes respectively. Gmail has a setting
inboxes.
Now listen,
I love their cheesiness. It's adorable.
If you go to soon, it will be on the Chrome extension store because I went through all the effort to do that. But there's a Chrome extension I wrote called Hey is for Horses. And all it does is it looks across the entire body of the HTML and changes inbox to inbox.
That's brilliant.
And so if you install extension, Hey will tell you you're at your inbox rather than your inbox.
Thank goodness for your thought leadership. Number one, I plan to install that, except not in Chrome because Chrome is just as bad and I'm trying to not use Chrome anymore. I switch over to Brave and it'll install in Brave though. They're all backwards compatible because it's the same source code.
Isn't that a Disney movie?
I think that it's that too. It's also like a very strange browser I'm using. But anyway, back to Hey real quick. So you can choose to archive all new emails or you can choose to set them to seen or to trash them. So I just set them to archive. So if I do skip out on Hey eventually, like it won't be a big deal. And if I do want to stay there, it's like on me to slowly but surely go update the accounts I care about to use the Hey email directly and cut Gmail out as the middleman. Because I eventually would like to stop feeding them more information about my life. Yeah. I mean, I search all the time, so there's enough about me. But, you know, just slowly but surely. It doesn't have to happen overnight. It's not all
and
or nothing.
Do they have the idea, concept of, like, multiple email addresses and a domain, your own domain? Or would you just need to forward everything to them and then kind of sort it later?
Yeah, it's forward and sort right now. There's not multi-domain management or, you know, bring your own URL just yet and setting up the whatchamacallits for that.
So I'm going to ask a very dumb question, but this is serious. If you were this worried about them, you know, you being a consumer, not the product, why didn't you just buy a domain and then buy like G Suite?
Because you're still the product in G Suite.
Right. No, if you buy a business account, they don't do any of the scraping or anything like that for you.
Oh, JJ, you're so cute.
Really?
I just want to hug you and hold you. And
that's the whole point of it, right? Like you buy the product. No?
No. So my understanding, JJ, is like you can pay them to do the business account. And there are additional features and admin interface around it that you are paying for. But I sincerely doubt there's a difference to the like terms of service that say like they won't be taking any info about you. Like and even if it says it in there, like that's where I have no idea why they actually wouldn't scrape that.
Right. It's probably that, you know, they're taking metadata, not the email contents, but there's still a lot of information you glean about a person from metadata. Ask the NSA and AT&T.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fair question, man. So like no shame in that. I think like if I really, really didn't want to be beholden to a company, it'd be, I'd go full, you know, open source revolutionary.
Squirrel mail.
Well, there's two other alternatives I have been thinking about, like Proto Mail is Proton Mail. Is it Proto or Proton?
And then fast Mail is the other one. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. They're supposed to be really good.
Yeah, Proton's beautiful, and it comes out of Switzerland, so it must be safe. It can survive the next war and will remain neutral. But both that and Fastmail are options for like less tracker-based economy. Or you can run it yourself. Nextcloud is actually a really powerful Google Suite alternative that's all open source that I've been playing around with. That's if you want to host a PHP application yourself, which to me sounds like a form of hell, but for you two former sysadmins, maybe it sounds exciting and also hellish.
Just rub some Kubernetes on it. It'll be fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get a PVC, put a container in front of it, walk away.
Now you have N+1 problems.
N+ cloud native.
There you go.
Love it.
Hey, so we're getting to the top of the hour. I thought maybe we should just have a quick chance to, like, anything you're currently working on, anything you've done recently that you want to give a quick plug or just talk about? Maybe we can count you as already gone, Matt, with Hey, unless you have something real quick.
Yeah, that's legit. They don't pay me for it, but I am fine with that.
What about you, JJ? Anything new and exciting? Anything you've done recently that is cool and you just want to talk about?
So I am still doing the whole COBOL and Kubernetes thing.
Look at you.
Yeah, still living and breathing. Might be a little bit of a zombie. Might be have a couple too much salt on its outside and it's starting to rot a little bit, but it's still working.
Oh, yeah. And now I hear you gave it a new name.
Yes, I did merge that. It is called COBOL from the World of Warcraft because it's COBOL on Kubernetes.
It's COBOL with a K, right?
COBOL, yeah. COBOL with a K. But yeah, it's alive and well. In the very near future, if you are listening to this when we release it, I'll have already done it. But I have actually a really big presentation with some really interesting groups of people about this to like show it live and actually talk about the continued of this working. A lot of people ask me when I do this, they're like, COBOL is like this massive ecosystem, a bunch of different stuff. And I'm like, yes, I totally get that. What I am showing you is that you can put any language inside a container and run it on Kubernetes. That is what I'm proving to you. So when you say we have a bunch of legacy applications out there, we can never look at cloud native. What I'm trying to show is that doors can stay remain open because you can look at it as a avenue to continue that conversation. So many times companies, so many times governments, so many times major different institutions shut the cloud native conversation down because they're like, that's a newfangled thing. I'm just trying to show that it is still possible.
That's cool. Yeah. So basically, if you drink enough Rockstar energy drink, you can run anything in Kubernetes.
That's
a damn good argument.
Yeah, that's actually true.
You're like the Will It Blend guy, but for Kubernetes.
That's perfect. Yeah. So how about you, CZ? What have you been working on?
Let me think. So last week, you and I actually did some stuff in Go, and it reminded myself how bad a programmer I am. So I'm actually playing around with right now, and I was doing it when I was working on it when we stopped to do this recording. But I'm writing a mutating admission webhook controller for Kubernetes.
Wait, what?
Sorry, can someone revive Matt? He looks to be deceased.
Mutating revolving door. Me.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, when you send Kubernetes a resource, Matt had to drop. Oh. Yeah. He had to drop. It's not me, it's him. Yeah. When you ask Kubernetes for a resource, it can ask something else to validate that resource is okay to run. Mm-hmm. And if so, if it needs to be changed at all, right? And so you run this webhook and it receives JSON and it spits out JSON, right? Mm-hmm. And so basically I'm writing in Go just a little app that will listen for that. And then instead of trying to figure out the logic and any mutations that need to be done, it'll just run a CLI, like a Linux command, pass the JSON blob as standard in, and then receive the standard out. Oh. So if you say wanted to, you could run YQ, and do like a YQ edit or a YQ merge. You could pass it through like sed or whatever, or you could pass it through, and this is the reason I did it, through a tool like Customize or YTT.
Oh,
so
interesting.
If you want every deployment to have a particular label, right? Mm-hmm. Or you want every deployment to have annotations to tell Prometheus to look for it, you can write a Customize or YTT snippet to do that, run it in this, and then every single time someone asks for a deployment, if they don't have the appropriate Prometheus annotations, it will just add them.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And so I thought that would be an itch I could scratch and kind of do some cool Kubernetes stuff, but also learn some more Go. And so I'm using Cobra, which is the CLI argument parser.
Yes, for Go. I've heard really good things about it.
And yeah. it is so good.
Yeah.
One of the things I just did was, you know, when you run a kubectl exec.
Yes.
And then you do a dash dash at the end and then tell it what command you want it to actually run.
Mm-hmm.
So with Cobra, there's a function that will tell you how many arguments in that dash dash is. Mm-hmm. And then so you can just cut the array of arguments there. And then you have the set of arguments to send to the next app.
Oh, nice. Nice. Right?
So there's just a lot of really cool things in there that make life, especially prototyping things, much, much easier.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's what I did. I'll probably, hopefully have it up on GitHub at some stage tomorrow if I actually get it finished, but it's nearly there.
We'll definitely put it in the show notes for this podcast.
Yep.
I think on that note, I think we're pretty much done.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Hey, now we just did an afternoon recording, an evening recording. So what beer are you drinking, JJ?
Yes. I'm drinking Rodeo Clown Double IPA from Carbosh Brewery out of Houston, Texas. Nice. By the way, their restaurant is effing phenomenal.
Yeah, I haven't been to their restaurant, but their beers are all pretty good. So I'm drinking a Dogfish Head. It's a slightly mighty locale IPA.
Nice.
Because I don't know about you, but my alcohol consumption has gone up the last few months. And so I figure drinking a beer that has lower calories but still pretty good flavor is not a bad idea.
Those rock stars I drink are zero calories.
Yeah, that's true.
240 milligrams of caffeine and a bunch of other stuff, but that's a different conversation.
My coffees are mostly low-cal anyway, so
There you go.
All right.
Cool. Want to say bye?
I will talk to you later.
Yeah, I'm going to say bye also. Bye.
Bye-bye.